Hello and welcome to the Greater Oklahoma City Chamber live teletown hall meeting. We will begin shortly, so please stay on the line as we wait for more participants to join our live event. If you have a question you'd like to ask, please press zero on your telephone keypad. You'll be connected to a member of our staff.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Roy Williams, President and CEO of the Greater Oklahoma City Chamber. I want to welcome you to the Chamber's live teletown hall meeting. This is the first time we've used this technology, but we felt that this current situation we're in has really created a need for us to be able to get information to our businesses very quickly. So we anticipate holding other events of this nature in the coming weeks. Cynthia Reed, our Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications, is going to serve as our moderator today to manage the flow of the call, and I'm going to turn it over to her now. So, Cynthia?
Thank you, Roy. Just a few quick housekeeping tips for this event. We are all live, and you will be given the opportunity to talk and ask questions later during the call. To ask a question, just press zero on your telephone keypad at any time, and a member of our staff will be waiting to help you with the process. If we are unable to get to all the questions during this meeting, or if you have more questions or comments, there is a voicemail option at the end of the live meeting. So stay with us and let us know how you like this format by leaving us a message. We're going to go ahead and get started with our first speaker. Dr. Patrick McGuff, the Executive Director of the Oklahoma City County Health Department. He has more than 30 years of healthcare experience with 20 years of his work in public health. He's been with the agency since 2008. He's going to give us an update on the situation and talk about how businesses can play a vital role in protecting Oklahoma County.
Good morning. This is Dr. McGoff, and I appreciate being on the line and having this opportunity, and I want to commend the Greater Oklahoma City Chamber for doing something that allows for social distancing, but also allows for messaging and communication, which are key during an event such as this. And I just wanted to point that out, even though there are issues sometimes kicking off something new, it is to be applauded that you're taking this opportunity to message folks this way, and I appreciate that. I think this morning it would be nice to just point out something. I've had some questions about the numbers, the current numbers in our state and in our county that have actually been confirmed cases of COVID-19. And so those from January 1st to present, we have 84 in the state of Oklahoma and 29 in Oklahoma County. You'll see a variance in numbers that are reported through different news streams because some folks are reporting the beginning of March till present, the beginning of February to present. But if we're taking in the entire year, we're at 84 for the state and 29 for the county. I think another key point that we want to talk about this morning is still the social distancing, working in our businesses. And we're encouraging a number of things that can be found on our website, occhd.org. And I want to go through some of those with you. And I hope everyone can hear me. I was having a little bit of feedback earlier when I was listening to both Roy and Cynthia. So we are encouraging, first of all, that if anyone has traveled during spring break, that they need to self-monitor for 14 days. In particular, they need to pay attention daily if they have a temperature. If they do have a fever or any other respiratory illnesses, such as coughing, they need to go home, self-isolate, and call a physician. They do not need to just show up at a physician's office. They don't need to run to the emergency room. They simply need to call a physician. So that is still our primary message about traveling from spring break, and I know that will greatly affect all employers. We're following the CDC guideline in particular and saying that if you've traveled to a spot that had significant transmission, what we're calling hot spots, in particular, those individuals need to take every precaution to self-monitor themselves for 14 days. But basically, we're encouraging more than that. If you traveled anywhere during spring break, we're encouraging folks to self-monitor because, as we've pointed out repeatedly, just because we are saying there are a certain number of cases, such as 84 in the state and 29 in the county, there are likely many, many more cases than that that are not diagnosed, that we've not had the testing capability for, or that did not meet the criteria to be tested thus far. So people may have been around folks who had COVID-19 and they were unaware, or they thought they had a mild case of allergies or a flu or a common cold, but they were never diagnosed. And so the same is true throughout the state. We could have had people within our own state, since we know transmission is present here in the state of Oklahoma. So everyone just needs to adhere to the social distancing, which we've talked about, 6 feet or greater, and we can go into more detail about that and particulars in the questions, but I do want to just reemphasize to employers this morning that some of the following things. We are actively encouraging sick employees to stay home. Employees who have symptoms of acute respiratory illness are recommended to stay home and not to come to work until they are free of fever, or and that means a temperature of 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit or greater using an oral thermometer, any signs of fever, any other symptoms for at least 24 hours. So they need to be free of any fever symptomology for 24 hours. And without the use of fever-reducing or other symptom-altering medicines, such as cough suppressants, employees should notify their supervisor and stay home if they are sick. And we know that this can cause tremendous pressure and stress on the workplace as well as on the employee themselves, but this is one of the key components, is that we need sick folks to stay home. We also want to encourage employers that they should ensure that their sick leave policies are flexible and consistent with public health guidance, and that employees are aware of these policies. And we are asking that you do not require a health care provider's note for employees who are sick with acute respiratory illness to validate their illness or to return to work, as healthcare provider offices and medical facilities may be extremely busy and not able to provide such documentation in a timely way. And there are a number of issues that we're pointing out. I don't know how long that you absolutely wanted to give me. I'm trying to find on the document earlier, I know that someone said, so I don't want to abuse my time. It looks like I have five more minutes, so I'm going to go into a few more items. We want to emphasize that when an employee is staying home when they're sick, that they need to follow respiratory etiquette and hand hygiene. We are also wanting to say that employers need to provide tissues and no-touch disposal receptacles for use by employees. We need to instruct employees to clean their hands often with an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60 to 95% alcohol, or wash their hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. And that can't be overemphasized, even though we've probably heard it ad nauseum, but it's a key to stopping the spread and to mitigation and to flattening the curve, as is the social distancing. We want to encourage employers to perform routine environmental cleaning and that routinely clean all frequently touched surfaces in the workplace, such as workstations, countertops, doorknobs. No additional disinfection beyond routine cleanings is recommended other than those cleaning things. Use the cleaning agents that are usually used in these areas and follow the directions on the label. We need to provide disposable wipes so that commonly used surfaces, for example, doorknobs, keyboards, remote controls, can be wiped down by employees before each use. Please advise employees before traveling to take certain steps. They need to check the CDC's traveler health notices for the latest guidance and recommendations for each country to which they intend to travel. We need to advise employees to check themselves for symptoms of acute respiratory illness before starting travel and to notify their supervisor and stay home if they are sick. We need to ensure employees who become sick while traveling or on temporary assignment understand that they should notify their supervisor and should promptly call a healthcare provider for advice if needed, but not to go to the physician's office or the emergency room unless they have called ahead. So I think without spending a lot more time on that, and I know we're probably running a little bit behind, I will stop there, and then I'll be happy to entertain questions when we get to the Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. McGough. Again, I want to remind everyone that if you have a question for anyone on the call, just press zero for a member of the staff. They'll log that, and we'll take those in just a little bit. I would like to now introduce Dr. Gary Raskob. He is the Dean of the Hudson College of Public Health and Regents Professor of Epidemiology and Medicine at OU Medicine. He also chairs the Oklahoma City County Board of Health. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Raskob.
Thank you, Cynthia. And was there something specific you wanted me to address, or you want me to give some general comments?
General comments, please.
Okay, thank you. Dr. McGough has given a really nice practical guide to employers, and I think that's good. I'd like to just step back a minute and maybe provide a little bit of background that really helps our public, our workforce, people really appreciate and understand why we're taking the measures we are with respect to public health, and why, if I want to leave one take-home point, is that in order to bring this pandemic infection under control, to limit and stop its impact or dampen its impact in Oklahoma, each and every one of us is going to have to do our part. Personal responsibility to do this and to think of our broad community as we go about this. We know that a number of the measures that have been taken and the things that were in the mayor's proclamation and so on are inconvenient, influence people in terms of their plans, their lives, and have a significant effect, of course, on employment and business and so on. But I just want to give a little background of why they're so critical. So this infection, and we'll appreciate our infectious disease physician, I'm sure, will add to this, but this is highly transmissible infection transmitted by respiratory droplets when people have close contact, meaning within about 6 feet of each other. These droplets come from our mouth when we talk, cough, or sneeze, and they can be inhaled or land in the mouth or nose of others around us, or they can land on surfaces. They can stay there, live there, be viable for quite some time, and you may touch those surfaces like your computer keyboard, your mouse, doorknobs, door handles, various other things, and then you may touch your face, your mouth, your nose, and so on. And this is how this a virus is transmitted. It's highly, highly transmissible, meaning that one person infected with COVID-19 on average will infect 2 to 3 others. Everybody's probably heard that the time from infection to the onset of symptoms is about 2 to 14 days, but we have a little bit more information from the epidemiology, the study of how this disease progresses and distributes since this has been happening over the last few months. So generally, we now know that about 50% of people would develop their symptoms within about 5 days of being exposed, and about 97% would develop it within about 11 days, and then the remaining out to about 14. But a large chunk develop it within that early 5 days. We also now know that the average time from someone being exposed and infected with COVID-19 to the time they will pass it on to someone else is only about 4 days. So the time that one person may transmit to another is shorter than the development of symptoms in many cases. And that's the crucial thing, that there is transmission before people become symptomatic, and there is also the presence of this virus across the community among people who may never develop symptoms, called asymptomatic, but who may be carriers and transmit it to others. And so this is really why the whole strategy had to transition from just isolating people who were sick and documented with the virus to a much more aggressive, broad community mitigation plan that includes social distancing and all the actions that influence our public in terms of gathering together and staying home and working from home and all of that, all of those things. And so all of those steps are going to be crucial, and our goal now is to prevent the words that now were typically in public health and clinical language are now tossed around by anchors on television, two of them, social distancing and bend the curve. And what we're trying to do is to use every strategy we know to prevent individuals from transmitting this virus to others, and then with the hope that over a period of time, the next 2 to 3 weeks being critical, that we can dampen the impact of this, not only in terms of the number of cases and the sickness and deaths it causes in our population, but in terms of the number of cases and their impact in terms of being able to be dealt with by the healthcare system. I know, I think our two next speakers will address that, but also in terms of impacting employers and their businesses. So the next 2 to 3 weeks are absolutely crucial. The steps that have been taken based on good public health science. We really ask everybody to comply with those, as was outlined. If you can work from home and do so remotely using technology and other things, we encourage all businesses to adopt that to the maximum capability, and to limit going out. And then particularly don't congregate in groups, groups, of course, less than 10 and even lower. Is being promulgated in some other states which are in a more serious situation than Oklahoma is. But the next 2 to 3 weeks are crucial, and our hope is that we will slow the rate by which new cases are occurring such that we can dampen the impact, bend the curve, so to speak, and ultimately then bring this under control. Cynthia, have I used up my time?
You maybe have just another minute or two.
Okay, I'll just say one quick thing about testing. Laboratory testing has been limited in the United States. There is a laboratory test that is needed to diagnose this virus. It's been a frustration of the medical and public health community that we've had very strict limitations on our ability to do this. But the good news is it looks like that is going to change over the next week to 10 days. And a number of new advances have happened there. A number of private laboratories are likely to be up and ready with capacity to do more of these tests. The Oklahoma City County Health Department, working with the hospitals in the city, is working to provide a facility for drive-through testing at the referral of physicians. The FDA just approved on the weekend a new test that will be available where the result can come in about 45 minutes instead of a minimum of 4 to 5 hours. And I know that I believe our governor has been in touch with that company in California to ensure that Oklahoma gets its share of that available testing and so forth. Testing will still be directed by your physician. So again, I think the most crucial message, if you feel sick or you're having these symptoms, don't just rush into your doctor's office. Don't rush into emergency. Call in first. Call your provider, and you will get guidance as to how to go forward, and you will get guidance about whether you need testing and how to get that done. So thank you to the Oklahoma City Chamber for putting on this Teletown Hall, and I'm really pleased to be a part of this and look forward to questions.
Thank you, Dr. Raskob. He will be available later in the call. I want to remind you that to ask a question, just press zero to speak to a member of our staff. Our next presenter is Dr. David Chansholm. He is an infectious disease specialist with Integris Health. He's board certified in internal medicine and infectious diseases. He's going to talk a little more about COVID-19 and the challenges he and his colleagues are seeing in treating this pandemic.
Thank you, Cynthia, very much for the introduction. I appreciate the opportunity to present to this organization, of which I am a member. COVID-19 is something that we've never seen before. Of course, we've seen cousins of it in the SARS outbreak back in the early 2000s, and then with a similar virus in the Middle East called Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, also a coronavirus in the Middle East. But those obviously did not have quite the global impact that we have seen with this one. Infectious disease specialists, we have been following the coronavirus pandemic since it started first in Wuhan in Hubei province, and have been concerned about it. But like everybody else, we are, you know, I'm an ID doctor in Oklahoma. I felt like it was something on the other side of the world. So we probably became a lot more concerned about it when we started seeing pockets of it pop up in Australia, in Japan. Then we saw the rapidity with which it began to cause trouble in Italy. And particularly in Italy was when we really started to learn the challenges of the pressures it puts on the healthcare system. So at Integris, and I know other major systems in the metro area and around the state, we have been focusing with the task force on how we're going to handle it when it hits our state in really large numbers. And it will hit our state in really large numbers. The concerns that we have primarily revolve around the ability to deliver care. With a pandemic of this nature, there's going to be a surge of patients hitting the healthcare system. Now, we need to remember that the vast majority of patients are going to do fine, are going to be at home, going to feel bad, have fever, malaise, things of that nature, cough, and never require contact with a healthcare provider or any medication. They'll get over it themselves. But those among the more fragile in our population, particularly patients over the age of 60, people with chronic immune-suppressing conditions like diabetes, people who are on immunosuppressive medications like chemotherapy or some anti-rheumatologic agents, people who have lung disease and heart disease in particular, all of these folks are going to be more challenged to fight the virus off when it comes into play. So because nobody has natural immunity to this virus, everybody is kind of at risk for catching it, and that's really where the surge comes up. The hospital we've been looking at both the hospital side of thing and the outpatient side of thing. How does that change your interaction with your doctor for routine follow-ups for, you know, your high blood pressure medications or your hypercholesterolemia or your surgical follow-up? And at Integris Health, we've been looking along with our community partners and doctor partners, practitioner partners, in ways to try and enhance the ideas of social distancing and enhance the delivery of care without direct face-to-face contact so we can kind of mitigate this. A lot of the challenges that we have in the hospital revolve around two things: the ability to test, which has been a challenge, as we know, across the country. I agree with Dr. Raskob that things are probably going to get better here pretty soon. I would say the 45-minute test, although encouraging, it's probably not going to be 45 minutes in real time just because that's how long it takes to process the test. But, of course, the machine can only do so many and everything like that. There will still be other tests that are going to be used. I suspect we'll have several different platforms available in Oklahoma, and that will help us on the hospital side to deliver medications more effectively and perhaps even more importantly, be able to take people off of isolation who have been ruled out for COVID. I don't think it's any secret that in the medical community, we have been very cognizant of the fact that this puts a lot of pressure on how much supplies we have and how much personal protective equipment to keep my healthcare workers safe. That has been one of our biggest challenges already. And the longer we have to wait on testing, the more we are going through those resources. We have had some amazing community partners bring us masks, gowns, gloves from other healthcare entities, from dental facilities, construction facilities, painters, and it's been marvelous. And most of the systems have donation spots set up for that kind of thing. But still, it's probably not going to be enough when we really start seeing a lot of cases. So we continue to drill down on opportunities to keep our patients safe, keep our healthcare workers safe, make sure that we can deliver the other care outside of COVID-19, and be prepared for the inevitable surge.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chancel. I just want to remind everyone that we do, we're getting close to the questions. So if you have something that you would like to ask, press 0, and a member of the staff can help you. And then we can put you in the queue to ask a question in just a few minutes. Our final presenter is Dr. Kevin Lewis. He is the regional president of SSM Health Medical Group in Oklahoma, where he oversees the operations of more than 250 providers. He is a board-certified pulmonologist, and he's going to talk about several important issues related to COVID-19 testing and medical supply availability. Dr. Lewis.
Well, good morning, and thank you for this opportunity, which I think is an important opportunity for us to have this dialogue. I also want to thank my colleagues who have already spoken and done a great job. Dr. Chancel and Dr. Raskob have already spoken to some of the elements around testing and testing availability, as well as our supplies and our personal protective equipment. You've probably heard that nickname, PPE. If you have not, you're going to, in all of the attention that is being given to this. So as far as testing, what has already been shared is accurate, and I don't need to expand on that much more. We are very hopeful to have testing capability over the next few days that is really ramping up. I think there is something important to know about testing right now, which is it's still limited enough that we have to limit testing to only the most appropriate individuals. And that is largely meaning with symptoms only and the correct exposures. That's creating some confusion because anyone who is watching the news media is seeing various politicians or NBA players or so forth be asymptomatic and get broad testing, and then they get a mixed message here at home. So we do want you to understand that the testing is still limited, has to be appropriate, has to be guided by a provider. And so we are trying to make provider visits accessible, oftentimes through a virtual or telephonic platform, which most of the healthcare delivery systems are offering right now for the public to have appropriate access to know if they would be ideal for testing. As that expands, there will be different criteria. That's a good segue to talk about supplies, though. Just because you say testing availability is increasing, there are certain supplies that are important to be associated with testing, such as, do we have enough nasopharyngeal swabs within which to procure a sample? And in addition to that, our individuals who are collecting samples in the healthcare workforce, they need appropriate protective equipment, whether it be eyes, mask, gowns, gloves, it depends on the situation. So when you're doing testing, you also need the appropriate supplies. And if those supplies are running low and you can't match one for one, a test kit, nasal swab, and the appropriate protective gear for a healthcare employee, that creates some challenges on the access to testing. And so that will be an evolving story. As far as overall supplies are concerned, you have already heard that is an increasing challenge. Many organizations had significant reserves in their supplies because of what we learned from flu epidemics such as H1N1 in the past or the Ebola threat. And those reserves have been burned through rather quickly in this situation. Because this is a worldwide pandemic, the supply lines and the manufacturing are extremely strained, and there's hardly anybody who has been left free of this issue, so sharing around the world is becoming very, very difficult. What that's leading to is days on hand of critical pieces that are getting very limited. And we're having to be very resourceful in terms of what do you do about that. For example, in our organization, we're trying to be self-sufficient in hand sanitizer. So with chemical company partner and our recipe, we're manufacturing our own and asking people to save their bottles, and then we are refilling those bottles and trying to become self-sufficient in areas we can. When it comes to masks or respiratory equipment, when it comes to gowns, gloves, those are also very strained in terms of supplies. Dr. Chancel mentioned the outpouring of support and donation and the other industries that are pitching in and helping. That must continue, and we can't say how thankful we are for that. But the traditional lines are struggling to keep up. And we're also seeing dramatic price increases for any inventory that is left or for ramping up of production. The comments being that both the manufacturing, the items that are needed to then put a mask together, for instance, that those supplies are increasing in price and the shipping prices are going up. And I think there's some suggestion of some price gouging starting to occur. So we're pretty concerned of what the cost of business is going to be just to have necessary supplies amidst the current economic environment that is there. Final comment about supplies, this won't be over when we get on the other side of the COVID-19 pandemic because we are deferring an extraordinary amount of usual care right now, such as elective surgeries or other specialized things that can be put off. And then that is going to lead to a wave of resurgence of necessary care that had been deferred. And what are we going to have in terms of supplies for all of that when it comes back into our systems? So interesting times for sure, unprecedented times, but we will manage through it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lewis. We're going to go ahead and move into the question portion of our event. So our first question, I'd like to call on Scarlett Lee Cao with Omega Investments. You have a question. Scarlett, are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Can you go ahead and ask your question?
Oh, okay. I thought that my questions were recorded and you were playing. Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
My question is, are we anticipate any lockdown at the city level anytime soon? Because as a business owner, we are very concerned for our workers, and we don't know how long we can keep up with all the disinfections routine and all that. It's just very overwhelming for us.
Okay. Thank you, Scarlett. Dr. McGuff, do you want to take that one?
Yes. So I will say that I am in daily and usually hourly contact at the very least with our mayor, and we are constantly looking at number one, healthcare priority for the citizens of Oklahoma City, and I'm considering all of Oklahoma County. And then as mayor, of course, he is very knowledgeable and concerned about economic results of some of the decisions that we recommend and that he ultimately enforces through a proclamation or a declaration of some type. We do anticipate that there will be some additional type of recommendations coming out from the health department and from the mayor's office probably later this week. I do not foresee any extreme measures beyond what we've already taken that would be shocking or surprising. We know that certain items, such as the grocery stores, have to remain open. We just want to continue to encourage employers in situations like that, that they have a plan in place that designs and creates a natural flow of social distancing. And we will be looking at some additional businesses and making recommendations for those probably later in the week, probably as early as tomorrow. But as far as a complete and total shutdown, lockdown, I really can't speak to that at this moment, and that would really be up to our mayor. I do not think that there's something that is so drastic that we could try that would not be advisable. I mean, our big piece is we need to stop the gathering of people. And, you know, you're hearing me say 10 or less in any gatherings. And even when people gather, they need to be have the social distancing piece in place. They need to be washing their hands. They need to be staying away from people altogether if they have any symptomology of illness, such as the fever or the coughing. So I don't know in particular what business that you may be concerned about, but what we would be looking toward is if there are things that remain open where someone has not self-governed themselves and there's a very close physical contact between the client and the employer, the business that they offer. So we'll be looking at some of those. But the mayor and I have already been visiting this morning about what those may be. We'll have continued conversations this evening and hopefully put out anything that we deem is necessary, both from CDC or other guidances that are standardized and that have some science behind them. We don't want to put any undue pressure or harshness on any business owner, and we're greatly, greatly appreciative of everyone that has, on their own volition, has decided to take precautions before sometimes we even recommend or that the mayor mandates those. It's been a wonderful thing to watch the community voluntarily decide they want to do what is best for their community and what's best for one another, not always just think about themselves. And so we appreciate that it's difficult, and I'll stop talking and see if there's a further clarification on that question or if I answered you.
Well, there is one. This is Cynthia. We had a question from a participant that I'm not able to bring online to ask himself. He wanted to know what factors are you going to be looking for to open things back up and allow the workforce to be integrated back into their regular workflow and workplace?
I think number one is going to be when we can sense that there's some type of the transmission is on the decline and that the virus itself is actually ceasing to spread and that people are overcoming it and that we can do something about it. Of course, we know there is no treatment, there's no vaccine at this time. And so the only really thing that we can do is the self-distancing. That's the only real tool that we have to prevent the spread. And so as long as we see cases on the rise and the number of people that are becoming ill on the rise, this will only increase. We're going to have to continue to increase our efforts. And as far as looking at what kinds of businesses that may need to be checking themselves, it would be, again, businesses where people cannot be further than 6 feet apart and provide whatever their service is. So those are things we'll start looking at as we go forward. And I'll stop there.
Cynthia, this is Dr. Rafkop. Can I just add a couple things to that?
Sure.
So I want us to give, I think, realistic information on this. And I think, you know, the original period was sort of a couple of weeks, and we're going to look and see. But from everything we know about this pandemic and from past, this isn't going to be resolved in a matter of a few days or a week from now. I think it's likely that we'll need to have a longer period. One of the issues is that, remember, all of the testing, if you follow the new cases in Oklahoma, those are based on people who maybe had that swab taken some days ago and who might have been infected over the 2 weeks before that time. So our testing data is lagging behind quite a number of days. So I think that in order for us to get a real assessment of whether we've brought this under control, I think the earliest signal on that is going to be 2 to 3 weeks from now, and maybe longer. And that's just the earliest signal. There'll be discussions about, you know, how long the aggressive social distancing and so on needs to go. For the caller who was concerned about this impact on the business, as we all are, and it obviously affects some more than others, I had the opportunity to be on a teletown hall with Congresswoman Horn last evening, and I would encourage anyone who's concerned and small businesses needing assistance, again, be in touch with her office. I think there'll be things coming from our federal government soon for helping a small business.
Thank you, Dr. Rathkob. We are planning another teletown hall later this week on some of those same topics, so you can look for an invite for that as well. Next, I'm going to bring in Stephanie with Baker Brothers Electric. She has a question about best practices for employers with people who are calling in sick. Stephanie?
Hi, thank you for taking our question. We're just trying to understand, we're in the construction field, and obviously we do have, you know, crews or construction sites that have far more than 10 people working on them at any given time. And, you know, given the time of year, flu season, allergy season, and all that, when we have employees who call in sick and say, you know, they're not feeling well, they don't know why, we're trying to decipher all the information that's come out. We've had some things from the Oklahoma Health Department that says don't require your employees to go to their doctor. Other things say no, you do need to send them. We're just trying to come up with what the best practice is to keep our, you know, other employees safe, keep the public safe, and yet also not overwhelm urgent cares or doctor's offices with people going in and, you know, then maybe getting sent to quarantine who they're not getting tested, obviously, for COVID because we know tests are in short supply, but maybe told to self-quarantine and now they're, you know, without income for a period of time. So we're trying to figure out what we should be doing to be responsible businesses in the community.
Dr. Rathkob, do you want to take that one? Or
yes, happy to do that. I think the best, if an individual is feeling sick, as we said, I think you should phone your doctor or your primary care provider, whoever your health provider is. I would never say to a person, don't call the doctor. I think, but phone them and get some help over the phone, because they can determine by some questions and other things, and I know Dr. Chansom may want to chime in on this, where you fit in terms of severity and other things and what you might need. Now, there may be a number of people with mild symptoms who could possibly have COVID-19. They possibly could also have flu or so on. They need to stay home from work for 2 or 3 days or whatever time. They may never get tested. I think this is one of the problems of the limitation of testing, because in an abundance of caution, I think some people have had to be isolated at home who maybe didn't need to be, and that's unfortunate. So we'll wait and see how testing becomes online and how that might be able to be used. But again, I would call your medical provider and get proper advice from them. Also, you can call the Oklahoma State Department of Health hotline on COVID-19, and I'll just pull that number out, and we can say that. I just don't have it in my pocket, but I'll get it while we, you know, go on to the other discussions.
Dr. Rathkob and Cynthia, if I could add to that, I fully agree with everything that Dr. Rathkob just said. The OCCHD, the Oklahoma City County Health Department, has their own call-in line, and that number is 405-425-4489. And so if you're looking at the employer's guidance that we have on our website, which is occhd.org, it speaks to this very question that you were asking about when we're saying don't require the physician to give them a note. And the entire purpose of that was simply to take the burden off of the physicians, the emergency rooms, so that they could deal with the sick versus the recovered. And so that was some of the intent, and I believe we've pulled that directly from CDC. But our website does cover guidance for employers. It's under COVID-19 Employers Guidance, and you just go to occhd.org, and you scroll down until you'll see the word on the left-hand side that says employers. And so I think you can find it there. And then the state hotline that Dr. Raskob mentioned, that's open, it's my understanding, 24/7, is 1-877-215-8336. And the Oklahoma City County Health Department line, again, is 405-425-4489. And that's open 8 to 4:30 Monday through Friday. And we're trying to take some burden off of the state health department line by managing those in Oklahoma City and Oklahoma County. And again, you know, the testing, I think, has been mentioned, but we're trying to limit that to the medical professionals who've been exposed, first responders who've been exposed, and high-risk individuals that are sick or symptomatic. And so that's the reason that we're asking employers not to require the physician or the note and things like that.
Okay. Thank you all.
This is Dr. Lewis. Can I add one more comment?
Oh, do, please.
There is a select group, so I love this question, and there's a select group of folks where we say contact your provider or your physician, but they may not have an existing provider or physician relationship. And where that is the case, folks wonder where they can call or what they can do, and some great examples have already been mentioned. Many of the health systems, including ours, have set up the ability for a web-based visit, even for somebody who doesn't have an established relationship, to screen them through the process and to identify those that might ultimately need to be seen or tested versus those that don't, and can be provided general instructions of when a return to work would be appropriate. And so those virtual or web-based services are available. I'll give you ours. Anybody can go to our website, www.ssmhealth.com, and find their way to that link as an option. I know that the other health systems are providing those options as well. We have made that free until this settles down.
Okay, we're going to move to the next question. Circe Wilborn, I think you have a question, or if you're on the line, do you want to go ahead and ask that?
Yes. My company is planning on moving forward with an in-person workshop next week, and their attitude is that as long as there are less than 10 people in the room, that it's fine. Would that be your assessment of the guidelines, or should we have some way to space out participants or postpone the workshop in the current environment?
So on that wonderful, excellent question. So as a health department here at City County Health Department, we're not recommending any gatherings of that nature. We'd prefer that people take an electronic version or a phone version, such as what we're doing today. And if someone chooses to move ahead with a gathering of 10 or less people and they're trying to have a meeting, then it's imperative that the distancing is practiced, that the hand washing is practiced, and also that the tables and the doorknobs and all the things that are going to be used are cleaned, as we talked about earlier. And that guidance for that cleaning is on occhd.org. But again, it's our recommendation, absolutely, that people not gather. And if they elect to do that, then we're literally just, you know, practically begging people to follow social distancing. We're talking about the difference between life and death for many people because of those that may gather that are not aware that they've been exposed or are possibly transmitting the virus to someone that is vulnerable. That's the key reason that we're asking that not happen.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to move to Sherry with the Science Museum, who has a question about people that have come in contact with someone who may have COVID-19. Sherry?
Yes. Hi there. First and foremost, thank you guys so much for your time and dedication to keeping this communication up. I know that your jobs are really not easy right now, but thank you for that. And we are obviously closed, but we do have employees coming in on a limited capacity, but a lot of questions come up in that they have been in contact with someone who has been confirmed with the virus. So it's not necessarily they're having direct contact, but it's contact through like 2 degrees of separation. And it puts us into a place where, you know, we don't want to make that medical call. Is there a general guideline on degrees of separation for allowing someone to, even if it's an essential employee, attend work?
So our epidemiologist, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is Dr. Chancel. This is something we get a lot. I know a guy who was near a guy who was near a guy and all that kind of stuff. And it's difficult to answer. And I think a couple of things make it even more difficult. Number one, the amount of asymptomatic spread. Sometimes we don't even know when we're near a COVID patient. And that's a real possibility. There are very specific guidelines from the CDC and I believe from OCCHD and Oklahoma State Department of Health also about what to do if you've been in contact with a known COVID patient. Right now, we're not specifically counseling anything different on patients who may be 2 degrees separated from that or 3 degrees separated. But I think because there is community spread, it really doesn't change anything with regards to the social distancing and hand hygiene. Testing is going to be great, and when we get those people that are 2 or 3 degrees off or 1 degree off, that's going to be fantastic, but testing is not going to fix this problem. Testing is simply going to help us identify the patients who might need more intense monitoring or modify our treatment plans. The only way to fix this problem is with social distancing and hand hygiene. Until we get a vaccine, that is the vaccine, social distancing and hand hygiene. So to the other questions about, you know, groups of 10 or groups of 20 or groups of 50, I'm not sure there's a magic number other than 6 feet between groups of two. And so I think that we need to continue to drive that home, continue to use our remote platforms as efficiently as we can. I would absolutely agree with Dr. Lewis in all of the medical systems have really tried to get their virtual platforms up so that you can speak with a healthcare provider virtually. And that is a real advantage at this time. But there's no specific recommendations for someone who's a couple of people off from a known COVID patient. But by the same token, there are lots of people walking around with COVID that we don't even know about. So you kind of have to continue to maintain those social distancing and hand hygiene policies.
Cynthia, and this is Dr. Raskow, I would just add, so here we've talked about 2 or 3 degrees of separation away. I want to take this time to underscore, though, if someone in your household has tested positive for coronavirus, that's a different recommendation, mainly because of the close contact within the household and the difficulty of preventing transmission there. So if someone in your household has tested positive for coronavirus, keep the entire household at home. Unfortunately, you know, don't go to work, don't go to school. You need to contact, you know, your doctor about what to do, or providers, and be monitored and isolate.
Dr. Raskob, we just have about 2 minutes left. Could you define social distancing more in depth for us real quickly? You know, we see people going to friends' homes, to family homes, and talk about, you know, the social distancing in the public and social distancing in private to help people understand what the best practice is.
Thank you. So essentially it means avoiding close contact with people. And close contact means coming within 6 feet. So person to person, that means no shaking hands, no kissing, hugging, all of those things. Stay a 6 feet distance. And that's the distance we want to be away so that just the natural talking and or coughing, sneezing, that you're out of the reach of those respiratory droplets landing on you. Then with regard to more general public, you know, that's all of the things there. It's more aggressive. It's staying out of groups, and groups is anything more than, you know, one other person. Staying out of groups where you can, working remotely whenever you possibly can, at home or if you can. When you go to the grocery store, the same rules apply. Try to stay away from other people 6 feet distance. Don't do that. I personally I've used the self-checkout rather than going close to the checkout, minimizing going out. It basically here, really at this stage, says, stay home, do whatever you can from home, and don't go out unless it's essential. Groceries and medications at the moment are the essential things. But it really means keeping distance from that close contact with others, and that's critical at this point in time with this infection.
Okay, unfortunately, we're now at the end of our time. As promised, if you were not able to ask a question live, you will have the opportunity at the end of this call to leave a voicemail, and we'll do our very best to get a response to you. Leave a message at the tone by clearly stating your name, address, phone number, email, and I think Roy Williams has a few final comments. Roy?
Yes, and thank everyone for participating, especially to our presenters. We appreciate it very, very much. As Cynthia said, we want to be a resource to you, so leave your name and address after the tone, but also feel free to contact our office at 297-8900 or on our website, okcchamber.com. With that, I think we have completed the call. Thank you.